The closer they got, the faster they moved. Major Zemyanin sat on his horse, peering ahead. Ice hung from the stiff points of his long mustache. He removed his fur cap with its lone silver circle and wiped his bald head with a fur glove. His pockmarked face was less gloomy than usual. All the signs indicated that they were catching up with the band of killers. They'd found the raggled, frozen corpses that Uchichil and his group had left as silent testimonials to their brutality. Bodies so torn by the wolves and other scavengers that it was hard to tell the manner of their passing. But some still showed the marks of burning or of the knife or the bullet. The cavalry patrol had seen identical marks in the hamlet of Ozbarchik on the other side of the frozen Bering Strait. During a day-long blizzard, the major had felt the unhappiness of his troops, many of whom were muttering for a return to their homes in Magadan. But he had urged them on with the promises of extra pay all around and hints that the best troopers might be promoted and transferred to the West. He knew from bitter experience that it was pointless to appeal either to their religion or even worse, to their loyalty to the party. But now they were close, anticipating an actual sighting of their prey within the next 24 hours. Aliyev, the Mongolian tracker with the hideously mutilated face, was excited. Jumping, green snot dripping from the raw hole where his nose should have been, he held up his right hand, showing only one finger, indicating a single day. Then he chopped at it with the edge of his left hand, showing he thought that the Narodyiki were even less than a day ahead of them. Zemyanin stood in the stirrups, using one of his most valuable possessions, a pair of scratched and battered binoculars with the name Zeiss engraved on the side. He knew of no other officer of his rank who possessed such a wonderful tool. Many had cheap telescopes or binoculars, but nothing to compare with these. To the south, in a cleft in the mountains, he could see a great wall of concrete, with a stream of water gushing from near its top. It had to be some sort of dam, he figured, blocking a river that was kept ice-free by some underground source of heat. He moved the glasses to the right and inspected a series of sharp-edged valleys. He thought he could see a trail worming into one of the valleys. For a moment, Zemyanin thought he could even see signs of life, a plume of snow, as though men on horseback moved there, and tiny black specks against the whiteness. But his hands began to tremble, and the glass blurred with his breath. By the time he wiped the lenses clear, the figures had gone. That was, if they'd ever been there in the first place. Avalanches had virtually destroyed the entire little mining town that had once flourished high in the ravine near the looming dam. Now only a few roofless shacks remained. Ryan and the others had discussed their plans, finally agreeing that the Russian guerrillas were too dangerous to ignore. In the morning, they would take the buggies and return to the redoubt. Then they would use the gateway to leave the icebound desert of Alaska behind them. Oki was on guard, walking cautiously around the ruined houses at the neck of the valley. From below, she heard the river tumbling over the rounded stones at the foot of the dam's spillway. To her right, she could make out the great dam, with its towers and pumping stations. The moon gave only a pale spectral light, not enough to illuminate the trail that clung to the mountainside, dappled with patches of ice and snow. It hadn't been easy to negotiate that trail, even with the tracked buggies, but there wasn't any other way up or down. Her low-heeled tan riding boots clicked on the loose stones. The mini Uzi was safely in its holster on her belt, the M16 carbine cradled in her arms. Looking behind her, she saw the tiny ruby glow of the fire that smoldered at the center of their camp between the two parked buggies. Straining her eyes, the blaster could see the grave-like mounds that were her sleeping comrades. The larger one was Ryan Cotter, and the mutie girl tangled together. Oki spat, her sullen face showing her dislike for Christy Roth. Ryan had shown interest in her before the redhead had appeared. If anything happened to the mutie, there was always the strong possibility of a nasty accident. She turned slowly, feeling the wind tugging at her long, dark ponytail. Behind her, she caught the sound of stones shifting, as if a piece of frozen earth had slithered down the hill. Oki whirled, finger on the trigger of her carbine. For a few moments, she stood there, still as a statue, ear straining for any odd sound. It came from her right, where an old concrete sluice hung perilously over the side of the valley, stretching up into the darkness. If anything were to happen to it, then the whole tangle of stone and metal would come grinding down on the sleeping camp. Oki moved slowly, keeping to the shadows, gun questing ahead of her. She placed each step with utmost care, as silent as a lover's touch on velvet skin. Her ears caught the frail scraping of metal on metal. She stopped, letting her eyes rake around the ghost town, drawing a slow breath as she saw them. Three or four people. One stooped over by the foot of the sluice's main support girders. The others ringed him, facing her. Oki raised her gun to shoulder level, bracing it, squinting down the barrel. She tightened her finger on the trigger. The explosion woke the night. The M16 spat out death, empty cartridge cases tinkling on the stones. She saw the bursting sparks as the 5.56mm bullets bounced off the rocks and the iron, screeching into the dark valley. Two of the four strangers went down under the first hail of lead. The third dove sideways, snapping off shots from a Kalashnikov AKM, the heavy 7.62mm bullets whining high over Oki's head, dashing splinters of rock around her. The fourth figure vanished into the maze of twisted metal. Oki's guess was that the fourth man who had been crouched over the girders was an explosives expert. If she was right, then he was the prime target. She waited, knowing that the third blaster was likely to try for better cover. He did. She bowled him over in a jumble of kicking legs and scrabbling hands. There was no need for her to warn Ryan and the others. At the first echo of the hammering carbine, they were awake. Within seconds, they were beside her, holding their weapons. Lori and Doc were the last to show.
Cover me!
Oki made her move, a dodging crouch run toward the spot where the fourth man had disappeared. Ryan and JB both gave scattering fire, raking the hillside to right and left of the darting girl. Hennings and Finnegan were behind them, taking shelter behind an overturned water tank. The four men hadn't come raiding alone. Already there was spasmodic fire from farther down the trail, but it was poorly aimed. The big man who'd gone into hiding was Grom, nicknamed Thunder. He was the expert in the gang on all manner of bombs, mines, and explosives. Uchichil had sent him in with a small support party to try to bring the sluice down on the sleeping Americans. Nobody had seen Oki, patrolling like a panther in the shadows. Grom was deaf and hadn't heard the opening burst of fire, but he'd seen his friends falling. Now he was on his own, with the long-haired woman after him. He held a parcel of plastic.